Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We're going to turn the page here and talk about a story that's quite different than the last few have been. This is a story from the New York Times. It appeared yesterday. And it says something that, they have no clue as to why this is the case. I just thought it was interesting. And it reads that space is no place for people. It goes on to say, in space, our heads swell. A typical human being is about 60% water, and in the free fall of space, the body's fluids float upward into the chest and into the head. Legs atrophy, faces puff, and pressures inside the skull rises. I'm just saying that away from gravity and away from the form that humankind was created to live, which is upright on our feet, that our bodies just don't work. You know, every valve in the human body, the way the heart works, you know, if you just think of the heart as a pump, well, you know, okay, so the heart can pump blood out to the various under pressure to various parts of the body, you know, up to our brains and down to our toes, out to our fingers. But how does the blood get back? And what happens is that that recognizing that we're designed to be an upright animal, the valves all open, or the veins are all open, going down to the extremities, going up to the extremities, but then coming back, these are valves that are triggered by contraction of our muscles. And so as we walk and we contract our toes and our feet and our legs, it pushes the blood that has delivered oxygen back up to engage with the lungs, to pick up more oxygen, to engage with our stomach, to pick up more nutrients, and then to be processed back through the heart, where it's then circulated out again, filled with all of the oxygen and nutrients, and having deposited the waste product that it picked up in the along the way. It's a design that is designed specifically to function in the gravity of Earth. Higher gravity won't function. Lesser gravity won't function. Ceases to function. And so this New York Times report saying that we're just not built for space. Now, the reason I wanted to share a little bit about this story, and I'll it's only a couple of more paragraphs, but is that physical bodies are a non-starter as it relates to the universe. You know, planets like Earth are extraordinarily rare, where you can have, you know, liquid water, which, you know, our blood can flow in such a way, where the gravity is not so oppressive that you can't move, but significant enough to make mechanisms like our bodies work, for us to be an upright creature. Because God wants us to walk with Him, to engage with Him, be upright in His presence, not bow down. But as you look at the expanse of the universe and the nature of the universe, light is a perfect mechanism. But physical bodies are a complete non-starter, totally and completely counterproductive, which is why this whole Christian fixation on physical resurrection is just so absurd. It's not only inconsistent with Yahweh's testimony, it's just inconsistent with reason. It's illogical. And this story is just one of many that explains we were not built for space. We will never be able to escape our planet and moon. As far as we're ever going to go is our moon. That's on our own. That is until we're transformed into energy by Yahweh. This article goes on to say the human body did not evolve to live in space. Should have said the human body was not created to live in space. That's why when God took Abraham to see heaven and to experience the nature of the light of stars, He had to take him as a spiritual construct. It says, and how that alien environment changes the body is not a simple problem, nor is it easily solved. Astronauts have trouble eating. They have trouble sleeping. The eyeballs of astronauts become squished. The biggest hurdle remains radiation. Without the protective cocoon of Earth's magnetic field and atmosphere, Astronauts receive substantially higher doses of radiation, heightening their chances that they will die of cancer. And that's the reality. We could no more go to Mars and return than man the moon. It's impossible because of the effects of radiation on our cells. The Discovery Channel posted some things on their website that I thought were interesting. It's along the same vein of we were designed with a purpose, and we're going to be transformed with a purpose. The first line on the Discovery Channel was, good luck getting your mind around what came before the Big Bang, when nothing suddenly became everything. God gives us a perfectly good explanation, not only of the Big Bang, his terms. He actually used the terms the Big Bang, which is why Christians deny the Big Bang. You're saying, what, are you crazy? Jehovah's terms, God's term, he used the term Big Bang. And he explained how nothing became everything. But what scientists can't do is they can't get beyond the Big Bang. They can't explain what caused it. They can't even explain what happened before it. And it is an enormous amount of things that have to happen before the Big Bang, because time doesn't begin. You can't even measure time. So when scientists say, you know, the universe is 13.7 billion years old, 13.7 billion years from the time that time was created. Because when the universe was pure energy, before matter actually was able to coalesce from that energy, time didn't exist. Time itself had to be created. And there's an enormous part of the genesis of our universe that is not able to be calibrated into a timeline by scientists. And if you want to know what came before the Big Bang, when suddenly everything became, or nothing became everything, read the Torah. In fact, I would encourage you to read the first four or five chapters of the opening volume of Yada Yada. Go to yadayada.com and click right there on the Haya volume, our existence volume, and study what God had to say. It's powerful. He explains not only how he created the universe, but also why he created the universe. And at the same time, he provides a scientific explanation of the process, but then provides a historical survey of the timeline. And we find that everything he said is precisely accurate. It's just one of the most amazing things in the world in terms of time. But once you come to realize that time is relative, once you understand what Einstein proved on our behalf with his theory of relativity, which has subsequently become known fact, that time flows differently. It's relative to the observer. And that, you know, if you are accelerated towards the speed of light, time slows. So that in the presence of enormous energy, time would flow more slowly. So what would be six 24-hour days from the appearance of someone at creation, we know for fact is about 14 billion years. From our perspective, looking back, because time flows much more rapidly here on Earth than it did at the site of creation. And we know this because we can measure the stretching of the wavelength of radiation that came out of the Big Bang. The Discovery Channel's next statement is, no force in the universe can counter a black hole's overwhelming gravitational force. It's the ultimate destroyer. You know, we've talked about this, that God describes Sheol, the place where those who have led the souls away from him through politics and religion, through militarism and through jaundice economic schemes, that's where they're going to spend eternity. And the Discovery Channel has a whole presentation on the nature of a black hole, which is the real Sheol, the real hell. It's a place where nothing escapes, where time simply exists, but that the pull, the gravitational pull, allows nothing to emerge. Then the Discovery Channel in that documentary said, had gravity been even a fraction less, even and the numbers are overwhelming, it's like 10 to the 30th power less, I mean, just infinitesimally less influential, then the material universe could not have formed and thus would not exist. And had gravity been an infinitesimal fraction more powerful, the universe would instantly have collapsed and become nothing but the world's universal black hole. Everything would be like hell. A lightless place. A one-dimensional place. This story was sent to me by a friend. I found it fascinating for lots of reasons. I'm going to share bits of it and then comment on it. It was reported by a blog, I assume. It's called The Daily Beast is the source. I don't know their proclivities. But it reads that I think the report that they're citing is from U.S. News and World Report. So I think that's the source of the story is U.S. News and World Report, but as presented in The Daily Beast. Its headline, the Louisiana public school system is cramming Christianity down students' throats. Now, mind you, the perspective is if they're cramming socialist secular humanism, political correctness down students' throat, that's okay. If they're slamming American propaganda down students' throats, pledge allegiance to the flag, that's okay. If they're requiring the students to learn a corrupt view of Islam, that's okay. But they're cramming Christianity down their throats. Now, to some degree, they are, by the way. But it's hypocritical to hold one school district out as cramming Christianity down their students' throats when 99% of them cram socialist secular humanism down their throats. A Buddhist family sued the Sabine Parish School Board for violating their rights to religious freedom. The lawsuit contains a shocking list of religious indoctrinations. Congratulations, this article reads. You are the parent of a private school student, and welcome to the Sabine Parish, Louisiana. We are so happy to have your child learning with us, and we are so grateful that your tax dollars have permitted us to establish the educational programs and academic atmosphere that we've developed. So let's start with what your child will see when he or she enters and departs our school. More on that when Shattering This continues after the break. This article from U.S. News and World Report says that if you walk into the school in this parish in Louisiana, you're going to see paintings of Jesus Christ, Bible verses, and Christian devotional phrases that adorn the walls in many classrooms and hallways. There is a lighted electronic marquee placed just above the building scroll that scrolls Bible verses every day. Let's think about that for a moment. There was no Jesus Christ, so we should begin there. Now, there is a diminished manifestation of Yahweh named Yahusha. And this picture would be well and do well, be meaningful in any educational environment. And if you actually paid attention to what he said and did, it's the most enlightening individual in human history. Now, it's interesting that they would paint him. I have no idea what he looked like. And the closest that we know is the Shroud of Turin, which I suspect is legitimate. And because Yahusha's body was evaporated with radiant energy the night of Passover as we transitioned into Matzah. And that the Shroud of Turin shows the energy that would have been necessary to have the Shroud maintain that image and for the body itself to be completely disintegrated, to no longer exist. That's the perfect, exactly what you would expect from radiation like that. And so I actually think that the Shroud of Turin is the one claim that the Roman Catholic Church has that's actually legitimate. Other than that image, we really don't know what he looked like. And he absolutely did not look like the Roman-nosed, blue-eyed, thin-fingered, average height guy that was in the perfectly white robes that is shown in Christian depictions. And he most certainly didn't have a halo, which would be purely pagan. He was a man's man. taller than the average, dark hair, would have had a little bit of a beard, a bit scrubby. Clothes would have not have been perfectly white or clean, and he made a living prior to beginning his ministry as a stonemason. He was a carpenter in the sense of chiseling stone. Strong man. Not anywhere like the picture has been painted. But, you know, if you wanted to have the most influential people of all time, I think that the single most influential person that ever lived is Shaul, who chose the Latin moniker Paulos, and his name is Paul. And he's the founder of the Christian religion. I can't stand him, but he's stunningly influential. Muhammad would be probably second most influential. Because of the pervasiveness today of socialist secular humanism, be hard to discount Adam Weishaupt. But it's hard to discount the importance of having at least some reference to the most influential people who ever lived. It is an educational environment, after all. As it relates to the Bible verses, we know that Bible is a bogus term. Bible is named after an Egyptian sun goddess. Yahweh calls his testimony the Torah, prophets, and Psalms. Psalms means writings that are set to melody. But to cite the Torah, prophets, and Psalms in an educational environment is totally appropriate. It's the world's greatest piece of literature. It is the most accurate portrayal of ancient history ever written. It's the most profoundly brilliant document of all time. It's the only document which accurately presents both the past, the present, and the future. Integrates them all together. If you're going to cite any reference for children to read, there is nothing better than the Torah, prophets, and Psalms. Now, you can have your Christian New Testament, but the Torah, prophets, and Psalms, the single most enlightening, brilliant, prophetic document in all of human history. Nothing compares to it. Christian devotional phrases, would agree, I have a real problem with that. An electronic marquee that is like a living billboard of Tim Tebow with his Christian citations, almost all of which came from Paul. Yeah, I have a real problem with that, too. In the main foyer of the school, one display informs students, actions speak louder than words. That's not true, by the way. Words speak louder than actions. Our words are far more effective than our actions. If you want to know that story, look at our actions in Afghanistan, in Iraq, in Syria. Because we did not wield our words wisely, our actions made bad situations much worse. We need to recognize that words are a far more effective tool than is anything we do in the form of a action. We'll be back in a moment. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We have Larry on the line. And before we get to Larry, I wanted to just read a little bit more from this U.S. News report. What we considered before the break was that the main foyer of the school, one display informs the students that actions speak louder than words. Now, that is not true. The single most important thing that we have today is words. Wielding words accurately, wielding them wisely, using words to understand. There is nothing more powerful than learning from words, communicating with words, developing understanding based on words. Most powerful force in our universe happens to be words. It includes several posters which encourage students to pray, to worship, and to believe. Larry, my friend, can you tell me how many? Larry, how many times in the Torah, which is Yahweh's book of teaching, he asks us to pray?
None.
Can you tell me, Larry, in Yahweh's book of guidance called the Torah, how many times does he encourage us to worship him?
He discourages it. He never once encourages it. Not as much as one time.
Okay. And then this last belief. Does Yahweh ever ask us to believe him.
Can I elaborate a little bit on that?
Sure.
Okay, I had a debate today with a guy who was running around saying, faith and belief leads me to the light, and on and on and on. And, and I asked him, I said, so Yahweh's lying when he says that it's understanding and knowledge that, that damns his children. He doesn't say anything about belief. I said, you know, Abraham talked with Yahweh. And yet he didn't trust him until Yahweh explained how this was all going to be done. Then he trusted him. It's trust and reliance on Yahweh. And under and by the way, we would have to understand his plan. You know, undirected belief in faith. I mean, I can have a belief in anything. I can believe in Santa Claus or the Tooth Fairy, and it doesn't really matter.
For example, during the height of the Roman Empire, everyone either believed that their leaders were God and that their gods were real, or they were killed. So lots of people chose to believe in the Roman gods. That was same thing was true with the Greek gods. It was same thing was true with the Egyptian gods. Same thing was true with the Babylonian gods. The answer to
what
the question that I asked
without
of,
direction,
right?
I mean, what,
yeah, the answer
got a plan.
Right. The answer to the question, of course, is that no, God does not want us to believe. The answer, of course, is that He wants us to trust and rely upon Him. You cannot trust someone that you do not know. You cannot rely on something you do not understand. Yahweh came up with the realization that words are the most effective means of teaching, of guiding. And he provided his teaching and guidance to us so that we could come to know him and so that we could come to understand what he is offering. And when you come to know someone and you come to understand what they're offering, you're in a position to trust and rely upon them. You now at that point have absolutely no use whatsoever for belief.
Yada, it's so important to Yahweh that he has a book. It's called Words.
Right.
Dabarim, corrupted to Deuteronomy. I'm not sure what that means, but
second law
mean words.
It means second law. It's Deuteronomy in Greek means second law.
Yeah, okay. So he says in there, surely the person who proclaims a message on behalf of a deity who oversteps their bounds to speak words in my name, which I did not instruct nor direct him to speak, and speaks the names of other gods in my mouth, indeed, that prophet shall die. Now, that's Dabarim 18:20. Now, let's go back to, you mentioned Biblia, the sun goddess.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it turns out, sadly, that Biblia was, Byblos is from Biblia, mm-hmm. which was the name of a Canaanite sun goddess, the Phoenician town known for weaving papyrus into scrolls, and they named it in her honor. You know, and I am certain we've offended Yahweh by attributing a bunch of highly copy-edited words named after a sun goddess to him. Now,
yes.
Yahweh didn't live in a vacuum. Yahweh lives in, he didn't have the constraints of time. He was aware that there were going to be 2 billion of these books, or 3 billion of them, whatever, all over the planet. He knew it.
Yes.
And he doesn't waste his time giving us words in a book called Words for us to seriously consider.
Right. And his prophets, both in Jeremiah, he goes into great lengths to tell us how disappointed he is that in us, for having corrupted and misrendered his testimony, and to say that that's one of the greatest crimes that has ever been perpetrated against humanity. In fact, he said that one crime in particular in terms of copy editing his testimony, which was replacing his name. Yeah, replacing his name with the satanic title Lord, was the single greatest crime that has ever been perpetrated against humanity. And so God doesn't
Lord
want you
to require worship. Right. They require worship, you know.
Yeah.
I mean,
the reason that Yahweh filled his testimony to us with a scientifically accurate timeline of creation with a scientifically, historically accurate presentation of early history, and with a precisely accurate presentation of future history, which she calls prophecy, is because when you read these things in this book, and everything he said was true, is true, and is on the cusp of becoming true, then after a while, you don't need to believe. If you're rational and you've invested the time, you know. So when someone asks me, do you believe that so-and-so is inspired, you know, this book? No, I have no use for belief. I know the author of the Torah. He's my friend. We have a one-on-one relationship. I know him personally. I don't believe him. I know him. Now, this article goes on and says, those sparkling electronic Bible verses that, and by the way, those were all would be all quotes from Paul, help students follow along as staff members routinely lead Christians or lead students in Christian prayer, and also distribute religious literature to students. Recently, for example, one teacher gave students a copy of a book from the Truth for Youth program. Truth for Youth Bibles consist entirely of the Christian New Testament. And they have cartoon tracks that denounce evolution and spread scientifically inaccurate information about birth control and sex and warn students about the evils of rock music, of drunkenness, pornography, premarital sex, homosexuality, sorcery, witchcraft, and other subjects. These kids these days...
Everything but the plan, huh?
Yeah. You know, it's... Half of the Christian New Testament was inspired by Hasatan, the adversary. Everything that Paul says and writes is untrue. He's not just a false apostle. He's not just a false prophet. He's a demonic messenger. He admits it in the second letter to the community at Corinth. He says that he's demon-possessed. In that same letter, he even admits that he's insane.
Yeah, he doesn't know if he was on the earth or in heaven or right where he was.
Yeah, you know what makes it very clear that that Paul is the plague of death. He calls him egotistical and presumptuous and says he is literally the plague of death. And he queries us and says, you know, why don't you question him? That's what his name means, is to question him. Why don't you do that?
That's a little barb.
Yeah, Yosha called him the wolf in sheep's clothing. He called him a false prophet. He called him a false apostle.
And
he called
course,
him a liar.
Paul, Paulos, whose name means lowly and little, in Matanyahu says those who trash the Torah are going to be called lowly and little, so they'll be called Paulos.
That is correct.
And of course, Paul claimed his tribe to be Benjamin, and Yahweh said Benjamin was the wolf.
Yes.
So.
Yeah, there's so many evidences. In fact, for those who are interested, you can go to the website blessyahweh.com or yhwh-qra.com, and you can read the recently edited and elongated version of Questioning Paul. It is absolutely worth your time. It proves emphatically that Paul was a false prophet. Paul is the one who said to pray without ceasing. Yahweh never asks us to pray. Never. What God is really interested in is us prioritizing coming to know him. He gave us two eyes and two ears so we could listen to him, so we could read what he had to say to us, and one mouth, so that once we know who he is, once we understand what he's offering, we can respond to him. Never once asked us to pray. Never once asked us to worship. So here you have the Christian New Testament.
He does say to us, though, he does tell us not to do anything that looks religious, never to imitate the religious, never.
Right, ever.
Not in any way, shape, or form. And I don't know of a religion that doesn't worship and bow down. I really don't.
Yeah.
They all do it.
Yep.
So we're
they,
not to imitate that. I do know that.
Here's the stupidity of religion. They denounce evolution. Microevolution is an absolute fact. Yahweh speaks of it. He says, you know, that he said when he created creatures, and he goes through the systematically and talks about where he created the various animal forms and how those animal forms then would evolve after their kind. We have all sorts of evidence of microevolution. What we know is not true.
They would breed after their kind.
Reproduce after their kind.
An example, you can get out there on an island out there in the West Indies or on the Pacific, excuse me. You get out there and you've got lizards that are based, they're chameleons that are, you know, 18 inches long. And then you've got these little tiny ones that are 1.5 inch long. And what happened was exactly, you know, microevolution, just as Mendel's law says, you know, little lizards bred after little lizards till finally they lost genetic material and they were little. And the big ones bred after big ones till they lost genetic material and now they can only breed big lizards. Right. That's microevolution. Now that's not saying that the lizard popped out of a piece of pond scum somewhere.
No.
You know, that didn't happen.
And the Cambrian explosion demonstrates that all 30 plus animal life forms that exist today all came into existence at exactly the same time. So macroevolution is not true. And science and archaeology prove it. But microevolution is true. They talk about here about all sorts of pornography and premarital sex. That's a Pauline teaching as well. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We're having a discussion about a Louisiana school district that thinks that it is their job to, according to the U.S. News and World Report, shove Christianity down the throats of their students. During this discussion, we've had Rod call in from Indiana and has a comment or a statement you'd like to make about the word worship. Go ahead, Rod, welcome.
Okay, yeah, 30 years or more ago, I remember I was in church and they had a sermon on worship.
Okay.
I don't remember what anything more than that, and I went home and I thought, well, that's a strange word. What in the world does it mean to worship? How in the world are you supposed to worship God? So I got out the dictionary and looked up the term, or the word worship in the dictionary, and it said that it came from the Anglo-Saxon word worship, which means to hold in high regard and to want to pattern your life after. In the case of God, you'd want to pattern your life after God and His way. Well, that, I think, is accurate, but the way we use the word worship nowadays, I have no idea what in the world it means. I guess it means maybe to do some brown-nosing of God and stuff like that, which I...
Yeah, lift Him up in praise and to bow down before Him is what it means today. You're right. While the word has evolved, and we're speaking the English, we've got, of course, use the word based upon what it means today, all you need to do is to know what worship is to go to a Christian worship service today. You know, the whole notion that that God would create a being to tell Him how wonderful He is, it's just utter nonsense. But the original definition, which is kind of interesting, this idea that that God is unique in the sense that He not only talks the talk, He walks the walk. He actually gave a tangible example and engaged in our world in such a way that we can follow His example. And so we can emulate His ways, and we can follow along in His ways, and that's a really smart thing to do. But when we're doing it, of course, we're up on our feet, we're engaged, we're on a first name relationship, we're side by side, we're shoulder to shoulder. You know, we're not blowing smoke. Any other thoughts on the evolution of the word worship, Rod?
Oh, not really. I just remember that I remember the dictionary, but I had no idea what the sermon was.
Dictionary
was a good dictionary, but a bad sermon.
Yeah, that's it. We have evolved. We've corrupted our language. There's a whole lot of words that we've corrupted. You know, another one would be democracy. Today we use democracy as in we're trying to establish democracies around the world. Well, if you look at democracy, the only two democracies of any longevity were the Sparta and the Delian League, and both of those were really, one was a defense mechanism, and the other was the most brutal society probably in human history. And so, yeah, we really corrupt our terms. And if we continue to corrupt our terms, then pretty soon we're unable to communicate effectively.
Well, that reminds me when I worked on the air boats when I got out of high school, the Lakers, the men that worked on the boats, had a kind of a code system of using swear words to communicate, and I couldn't figure out what in the world they were saying. You're talking about language.
Yes.
Things deteriorated. So.
Yeah. I would say that the single most important thing we can do is to wield words wisely, to know what words mean, and to use them effectively when we communicate. And there's no more powerful tool in the universe. It's why the Torah is the single most valuable document ever given to humankind. Well, Rod, thank you for calling. Please call again. With that, I'd like to go to Jason in Toronto. It's been a long time since I've heard from you, Jason. It's good to see your name on the switchboard. Welcome.
Good. Good to be back. It's been a busy few months. Yeah, I had a question and a comment.
Okay.
One of them was when you're talking about the macro evolution, and one of the best arguments I heard against that was sort of an idea called irreducible complexity. I don't know if you heard of it, but basically it points out that the whole idea of, you know, survival driving evolution and whatnot, that there's really no reason for an organism to carry over genetic material of like a half-developed heart or eye or other organ to survive.
Yeah, in fact, Jason, I hope you can stay with us over the the news and commercial break here at the top of the hour. I would like to get into that because there are some issues that, as particularly as you develop the eye, which is an extraordinarily complex device. Let's talk more about that when we return to Shattering Myths.